let's have a listen to Tony Cochran. And look, he was on AFL 360. It was on the couch on Fox Footy last night talking about expansion in the AFL. That obviously pertains to a lot of our audience down in Tasmania. Also, whether Gold Coast should stay in the competition. All those sorts of things was discussed with Tony Cochran, the chairman, the president of Gold Coast last night. Here's what he had to say.
Firstly, if you actually listen to my commentary, it's not aimed at Tasmania. My commentary is, and I'm living proof of it, I'll open up my books, Brownie, you can come up and have a look. The AFL as an industry cannot afford a 19th franchise. I don't care whether that franchise is in Timbuktu, Tailem Bend or Tasmania. That is my point. Right at this point in time, we've got, I think, 12 of the 18 clubs have significant loans, are significantly in overdraft, or whatever financial cover you want to put on it. So I do not believe that we're in a position at the moment to expand the competition. It's as simple as that. Well, Rui, what I did was I read the initial report, written by a bloke, I might add, who chaired it, who 3 weeks after handing in the report went and joined the board of the Australian Rugby Union. I'm not sure that's kind of the dedication we want in AFL circles. And then I took the time, my time, freely, to spend, I think it was nearly an hour and a half in a Zoom meeting with Colin Carter to go through all my comments and all my thoughts about that report with Colin. So I have schooled myself here. I do come with a fairly large business brain when it comes to sport, and that's been my way I've tried to make a quid for 45 years. And I just do not believe that anybody can convince me personally, and I happen to know many other presidents as well, that in the current climate, and what I mean by that is probably the next 3 to 5 years, we could consider expanding the 18-team competition.
So that was Tony Cochran on the couch last night on Fox Footy. Some pretty strong words there. Before we bring John Ralph in, Raymond, what are your thoughts on what he had to say there? He's good for the competition, Tony Cochran, whether you agree with him or
well,
not.
Well, yeah, he's very good. But what the thing with Tony is he's researched. It's not like he's just shooting from the hip and coming up with these comments. He's actually read all the information that's been provided to him, so he understands that. Now, I know he's protecting his own team. Of course he is. Because they're not going well. That's all for everybody to see, but he's allowed to argue that way. Not everyone's going to agree with Tasmania as the next license within the AFL if that happens. There'll be some that do, there's some that don't. He's passionate about it the other way. Now, he's got his opinion. I would love to see a national competition. I would love to see a team in Tasmania, and I'd love to see a team in Darwin, but is it financially viable? That's the question.
The interesting thing is, even when you read through the text messages that come through and people that call in the station with this program going to Tasmania, more are against it than for it, which is interesting. And then you've got the influential media figures like, say, Tim Lane, who's so passionate about Tassie. Yep. There's Nick Riewoldt. There's Matthew Richardson. It's interesting that it isn't clear-cut either way as to whether it's a good idea or not. So from people in Tasmania.
And Ralph, you will know this a lot better than I will. Both teams now, GWS and Gold Coast, this is the Gold Coast 10th season, so GWS 9th season. Both teams are nowhere near even close to standing on their 2 feet financially. You listen to Tony speak then. 12 of the 18 clubs have loans out. They're in big debt. Like, there's only a handful of clubs that actually make profit every year. So, you know, that part of the game, we're living in different times now. We saw the impact, obviously, of the coronavirus last year and what's that done to clubs and how they've had to tighten up so many areas of their own operations. So, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where we've got struggling clubs continually for the next 20 years. We want Gold Coast and GWS to be standing on their own 2 feet. We want St Kilda to be able to do that. Western Bulldogs are working their way out of it. North Melbourne have almost worked their way out of it to zero debt. That's what we want our football clubs to be able to do.
John Ralph from the Herald Sun joins us. Ralphie, good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. Yeah, 12 of those 18 clubs, as you said there, Rama, did make a profit last year and have significant debt. About 12 of those 18 clubs would have to vote for this extra licence, this 19th licence. It's that super majority there. And look, you know, I'm very big on Tasmania. You know, I'm a journo. It gives us lots of talking points, and I'm all about fairness. You don't have to be about fairness when you're in business. But you look at the Melbourne Football Club, they just lost $2 million in the space of 9 days in two games that weren't allowed to be played because of COVID in the states they wanted it to. St Kilda, $13 million of debt. You think those clubs are going to vote for another club? Now, because the issue is, as the AFL keeps threatening behind the scenes, okay, we might put out, let's call it, you know, $12 million by 18. So, you know, a couple of $100 million per season for the annual distributions. We're not going to spend an extra $20 million. So that pie of money is going to be divided by 19 teams rather than 18. And so that's what the AFL continues to say behind the scenes there. Yes, those clubs, those expansion clubs are massive money pits, nearly $20 million a year. But St Kilda's $12 or $13 million a year. And so, look, if the AFL did it, it would only do it in a way which would generate a lot of money. I think it would have to be by playing Thursday night football every week of the year, and maybe by selling it off to a Channel 10 or to an Amazon or to someone like that. But I think it would need to be something, you know, really left field to generate the extra $20 million a year, because otherwise I just can't see it happening.
All right, so that's the latest there from Tony Cochran and from John Ralph. Now, Ralphie, you want to talk about James Heard, and in a way that I'm a bit surprised about this morning, to be honest.
Well, I just I thought to myself, you know, now clearly, you know, the way forward is not for extra draft picks for the Gold Coast. The way forward is for an extra $500,000 in the football department cap. You know, the powers that be are suggesting that that's something that is quite likely. But how do you get someone up there that actually, you know, either as a senior coach or as a senior assistant that actually wants to go there? Because you look at the, you know, the strewn reputations of those that have, you know, Guy McKenna and Rodney Eade and, you know, these guys that went up as the best and the brightest and just came back just absolutely shredded in terms of their reputation. I look at the way Justin Lepich spent a year in the media and he enhanced his reputation. I think if James Heard went up there and spent a year as a senior assistant or whatever that might have been, I think by the end of it, he'd be ready to, you know, step into a, you know, whether it's a senior gig or as a stepping stone to get back into a major club. Now, he might not want to do it, but his kids are, you know, are in that high school age. You know, Tom's at Essendon. It might just be the single way in which he can get back in. He's a very young man, and he's still a very, very good senior coach despite all that happened. It just, you know, the couch boys threw his name up, and it just tweaked my interest. I just think it's an intoxicating proposition.
Rama, you know James Heard very well.
Look, he had all the hallmarks of he was going to be an outstanding coach. The players loved him. There was absolutely no doubt about that. And he was very good tactically. Obviously, the rest is history now of what happened. I would love to see him back in AFL. I would just absolutely love that. Whether he's going to do that to himself and, I guess, open himself up again to that form of criticism, I'm not sure. I know he's very happy and very healthy at the moment. I only spoke to him a couple of 2 weeks ago, and life's good for him. So I don't know if he wants to do that. I don't know if he's prepared to open his life up again to that type of feedback, positive feedback and negative feedback. I'm not sure, Ralphie.
Remember, I think about the coaching acumen and the tactical stuff that David Teague's going through. You know, you've lived it. How long would it take to sort of, you know, modernise yourself in terms of those, you know, the defensive methodologies, you know, the modern game plan? Is that a heartbeat kind of thing, or is that something that'd take him a couple of years that are, you know, as a senior assistant?
For Hurdy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he'll be still up to speed now.
Yeah, there you go.
He just, I know how much football he watches, and I know how much he still loves the game of football. So that would be almost instant, Ralphie. There's no question on that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I know it's a left-field proposition. I know it's probably unlikely, given, as you say, that he'd be looking at the focus on David Teague and on the focus on Nathan Buckley and saying, why would I throw myself back into that situation? But, you know, it's time for some bold measures there. You know, I keep thinking about what Dylan McLaughlin did with the Melbourne Football Club. So he got a West Coast member in Glenn Bartlett to become the president, who was extremely successful. You know, he got Peter Jackson in from effective retirement. He paid a couple of $1 million worth of debt. So it's almost getting to that stage with Gold Coast. You know, that they've slathered them with talent, and that's all very well. but you need to do something for the backroom stuff. And look, if it's not him, I don't know. Is it Lee Matthews? He's parachuted across from the Brisbane board to the Gold Coast board. You know, it's not quite Mick Malthouse, you know, as a senior assistant there. You know, I think this club would love to keep Stuart Jewin as their senior coach. I mean, you know, obviously if the season continues to go really pear-shaped, maybe not. But, yeah, it's all about support. And that comes from the AFL, and it comes from really elite figures who will change the conversation there.
Ralphie, I think you make it a really good point. Obviously, the money that's gone out of the soft cap, and Gold Coast still aren't paying up to the maximum they can now. So we talk about money in the game for these new franchises. Gold Coast should be paying right up to that cap and probably more to continue to be able to develop these players and create. They've got to create their own environment. They're still creating a culture. At that football club, GWS is still creating a culture. But if you look at both of those clubs, if you said, "Well, what culture is better? Who looks like a football club?" You say GWS. So yeah. It's a tricky one.
Yep, and I think too. I think the next 18 months, we've probably said this a few times at Gold Coast, but it is so critical because right now, people like Ben King and Lukosius and Rankin, they love this at the football club. They want to be there. They're signed till the end of next year. They absolutely have, you know, leaders like Tuke Miller and David Swallow and Jared Witt, people who wanted to stay there and, you know, need some help, but really are invested in making it a great football club. Now, at the end of next year, obviously, you know, it's the doomsday scenario, but if two of those three blokes walk out, you think to yourself, it's another five-year rebuild. And so that's why Gillon McLachlan needs to step in, not to just throw them another five or six picks, but just to get it right and to make sure everything they're doing is right. Sometimes just it takes a while and then it clicks. But other times, as we've seen with Gold Coast, they've had about 6 good weeks of football where Gary Ablett was getting 45 a week. You know, in 10 and a half years, there's been a lot of misery at that football club and something needs to change there.
So, Raman, just the final one on Hurdy. Do you think he will get back into footy at some point to not right the wrongs of the past, but just to have another crack just to sort of finish off his football career so it doesn't end the way it did?
Personally, I do hope so. But I probably think it's more unlikely at this stage.
Carlton. Now, they rolled out the senior players yesterday. Three of them, Ralphie. We had Patrick Cripps. We had Jacob Wiedering. We also had Liam Jones. Did you believe what they said? Did it feel like it was the right thing to do? What were your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, I believe they're trying. You know, I think of all the discourse over the weekend, I think the one thing that just stuck out to me was that the lack of clarity. You know, you or I could try, Whitey, playing a defensive methodology. We're not fit enough, quite, and we're no good. But unless you actually know specifically what you need to do in lightning time, in real time, to make those decisions, you look confused. And then you take two steps forward, and then we saw that horrific passage of play where Whitfield just outran their stars. You know, Jones and Cripps and Curno and Walsh and Dow. You know, they're the players that should be thriving at this football club. I thought about if David Teague was out of contract this year, would he be any chance next season to be coaching? And I thought of all the things in the review that they will have a look at, the ticks or crosses. So I thought morale, well, that's a cross right now. Method in terms of game plans, a cross. Player improvement, you know, Sam Walsh is a great player, but, you know, he's a number one pick, he's self-driven. Cross. Development of the kids, you know, we haven't seen the Petrescu, Seatons, the Dows, those kind of players come through. It's a cross. Can he take us to a flag? Well, that's a cross. They have a crack meter, you know, in terms of the tackling and the pressure, that's a cross. The messaging, well, it's been mixed, that's a cross. And the one that they will think about is selling hope to their fans. That's a cross right now as well. And so, look, the review will bear all those kind of things out. But right now, when it's so clear that this is a review about David Teague as well as everything else, no one wants to see him move on. But he's coaching himself into a situation where it's almost impossible for them not to sack him.
There's probably two I disagree with there. I think the attacking methodology, that's a tick. They can play attacking football. They can score. And the other one is selling hope to fans. Ralphie, they were very good at that at the start of the year. They had their fans believing they were going to play finals.
But they believed it themselves.
But that's what
yeah, so that wasn't artificial. They genuinely believed that themselves.
So they sold that to their fans.
Yeah, but whether it was false hope, they did believe it. And this is where there is a clear disconnection now between the reality and what they genuinely thought at the start of the year.
So Ralphie, how do you see the review playing out? Kane Little's come out and said it's not about the senior coach. When is the review happening now as we speak? Do we know when it finishes? Have we got any answers on that?
Well, none of the players have been interviewed yet, and so Patrick Gibbs said yesterday, look, you know, from our point of view, we don't believe it started. But I think it's quite clear that it'll go through to the end of the home and away season, and they'll make decisions quite quickly after that. And so, you know, everyone in that football department will be, you know, interviewed. You know, I think Brad Lloyd will make his own investigations as well as the external review there. I think 4 weeks ago, they really felt like he was their man. But, I mean, obviously they've gone one, you know, 1-5 in the last 6 weeks. And so, you know, as Jason Dunstall said yesterday, you know, you speak to everyone at the football club, you get the trends that emerge, you ignore the outriders, you ignore the yes men who are always going to be, you know, very positive of him. And I think they'll come out with an overriding feeling about, effectively, can David Teague coach? Yeah. Carrow talked last night about, you know, there's some disillusionment, you know, from the players. You know, I'm not sure that they're off him in any way. But the more player managers you speak to who have got Carlton people, it's sort of that, no comment. You know, no one out there wants to say, we believe in David Teague from a playing point of view. I think they're confused. I think they lack clarity. And, you know, I mean, you would know much more than us how hard it is to institute a defensive methodology. But right now they're clearly trying, but the players just don't seem to have any idea what they should be doing at any given moment. And so those things need to become instinctive. They are so far off it. And the question is, can he ever teach them that?
So how fair is it on a coach in his, effectively, second season of football?
Effectively his first proper season,
that's
considering
right.
Last year was what it was.
To be going through an internal review now, shouldn't this type of review stuff be done after the season rather than...
Not for me.
Well, but it's just all it's doing is putting pressure on everybody. That's all we talk about. Oh, the review.
But what's the worst scenario, though? That they get to the end of the season and they're, whatever they are, 5-17, and they think, hang on, we're in massive strife here. It's too late to move the coach on because we don't have the evidence, because he's only, as you say, in his second year. And then you get to next March and you think we've changed everything. And as it turns out, well, the coaching methodology is the one that really needs to change. You know, I think it's unfair. You know, you look at Mark Neild, who was, what, sacked halfway through his second year.
Yep.
Now, the one that I kept thinking about is Matthew Knight, who, you know, was so good in so many different ways. And yet he just taught all out of fence. You know, some of that came easy to an Essendon side. Some of that was about really good coaching. And he just ignored the defensive aspect of it. Now, you know, Teague clearly, you know, too late for the party, he's realising he needs to put some work into the defence. But, you know, when Carlton is so deep into their rebuild, when they've invested so much in their young draft picks in terms of finances and also games, and also, of course, into, you know, $800,000 into McGovern, and you know all the figures out there, I don't think they can afford to waste a year just hoping he might be the bloke. They need to absolutely have empirical evidence that he is through this review. And it may well be that he's kicked off because of it, which would be brilliant. But there's no evidence right now to suggest that he should be.
The one final thing I'll say on the Carlton situation is, and I said it yesterday, half the team on Saturday night had come from other clubs. So when the review goes on, I hope that they are absolutely reviewing the list management strategy of Carlton, because 11 had come from other clubs. I'm not sure how many of them have improved the football club. And that's also... you've got to put into list management some of the draft strategies and some of the players that they selected inside the top 10. If they're reviewing David Teague and whether he coaches well enough, I hope they're reviewing the list management strategy even stronger, because I still reckon that's the key reason they are where they are. Essendon, Ralphie, they've become your favourite club with what they've done this year. You were with them at the start of the year, you pumped them up, and they're delivering for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you're talking about internal expectations. I wrote at the start of the year that, you know, they would be a bottom four club, and that they knew it. And a lot of people saw that as a criticism. But it was just that was what the messaging coming out of Essendon was. We know we've moved so many players on, and we're probably 3 years ago, 3 years away, which is why what they've done is so exceptional. I just look at, you know, a 15-week period in which, you know, you can set your club up for 6 or 7 years. So Jake Stringer will sign up. He's no chance to leave. He just wants, you know, good money, and he'll get that, albeit potentially with incentive clauses there. Zach Merritt signed up. Darcy Parrish has already signed himself to the football club or wedded himself to the football club and will sign up. And you know that the three kids will sign, you know, those 2-year extensions to a third and fourth year in the next 10 weeks. It's just amazing, isn't it, how you look at St Kilda, have a bad 15 weeks. You know, you jettison your talent. You potentially, you know, jettison those around in terms of Jack Billings. And yet, you know, yes, Essendon are playing great football, but if you've got key players out of contract at the right time and you're flying, it can do so much good for your footy club. You look at Melbourne, Bapa sacked the coach, all of a sudden he'll get an extension, you sign up Petraka, you sign up Oliver, you sign up Gorn, you sign up Salem. You know, from that list management perspective, Rama, I mean, it must be just so good to have players who want to be at a football club, and so good for Adrian Dodoro when he's trying to re-sign them.
Yeah, look, I think it's fantastic that they're going well, and that's probably the difference between Essendon and Carlton. Carlton had to put the expectation on themselves, and Essendon they didn't. So now it's people looking at Essendon going, this is going fantastically well. But I still think there's pieces that are missing at Essendon that need to continually be worked upon, and how Adrian Dodoro and his list management team are able to keep the money that they had in the cap for those players, but also play the players that have improved is going to be a tricky one.
So, Rama, from the situation where Adrian Dodoro was at the start of the year, where they tried to get Josh Dunkley in and they had money for him and allegedly had money for another one if they so desired, because of the players that went out.
Yep.
Do you think there is, because they would never have anticipated they'd need to pay Parrish as much as they did. They always knew Zach Merritt would be what he was become or what he is. Is there the money there to still go and trade in or free agency in a player, even though they're still having to pay more for Parrish and Stringer?
Yep, there'll still be money, but they have to work out, is that the actual best player that they need now? They used Josh Dunkley as the example. Is that the type of player that they still need? Now, I think Parrish is doing a terrific job in that. You've got to remember Caldwell's to come back into the team still.
And so, Dylan Shiel.
Well, Caldwell's more...
the inside man.
Yes, correct. So is that the type of player that they need? I'm sure Adrian and his team are working through that as we speak.
Because they also need to be...
what do you think they need?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
Not to say that they want for nothing. I'm not that bullish on them. But, what do they need from a list?
I think Cale Hooker is doing an amazing job for Essendon, playing as that key forward. And he'll be there next year. But they'll probably look for another key forward, in my opinion.
Well, Harrison Jones is the Rising Star nomination for this week.
And he's going to need a running partner for many years to come. Peter Wright's doing a good job, but he's 200 centimetres and plays forward ruck, so they're going to need another key forward.
A couple of quick ones, Ralphie, before we let you go. The latest on the fixture, where do you think this will land? And I, to be fair, I don't know whether anyone really knows because of what's happening in Sydney and potentially Brisbane as well, but what are you sensing at this point of time early on a Tuesday morning?
Yeah, because of the pretty stringent authorities and the South Australian health authorities, I think it's really unlikely that the Port Adelaide-Sydney game will go ahead at night. So that's more likely to be a twilight game, which would likely see Collingwood and Fremantle dragged forward to that 2:10 slot, or maybe even like a 2:40 slot. So I think right now North Melbourne Gold Coast is that 1:45 slot. I'm not sure there's a huge amount of appeal there. And so, look, there is a chance that Collingwood Fremantle gets flexed back to the Saturday night, but I think it's probably less likely. It's more likely just to have one game there. So, we're still waiting for the Sydney numbers. If those Sydney numbers, pop again, I think, within a couple of hours, the players will have bags packed and they'll be on a plane and they'll be, in almost a midi hotel there in South Australia. But the game will go ahead. It's just a matter of what time. And Fremantle will come in on Friday and they'll effectively just be in, hotel quarantine. They'll take on Collingwood on the Saturday morning. And then I think even if it's a twilight or a day game, they'll be out and they'll be getting back to Dodge on Saturday night.
And then crowds this weekend, they were hoping initially for 50%, then they thought maybe 30%. It might not be as many as that.
Yeah, I think every time we've got our hopes up, they've been dashed. I think 30% is still a real chance. The government people I spoke to yesterday said, don't forget the fact that there are A-League and NBL finals. And, of course, they did move an A-League final last week, but... I just think it would be sheer bloody madness right now. And there's a political aspect to it as well. They're just taking the mickey. If you're allowed to, if people are allowed to open up, within the state, and yet, football crowds aren't allowed to be there. So, look, I still think 30% is a legitimate chance. But the feeling was that James Molino would announce the opening up of the state at the same time as that. He doesn't want to get ahead of it with football crowds. So we're probably going to have to wait another 24 hours.
Thanks as always, Rafe. We'll catch you again soon.
Thanks, guys.